So shall we start? He's continuing with the different aspects of just the life force. The life force which is not necessarily an expression of the divine energy. It is working in the field of darkness also. So that energy becomes darkened. So we have the vital movements in our nature, vital expressions of force which are violent, ugly, often harmful. But the same life force, when it is put into the play of the higher consciousness, becomes a creative energy, becomes an expression of when you can overcome yourself and become something greater and higher, because that energy is there. So it is like saying, in itself, it is neither good nor bad. Not, there are very few things that are really good or bad. There is this force, there is this energy. If it is at work in the field of inconscience and ignorance, it becomes darkened. That is why there is one sentence Mother has said, evil does not exist by itself. The only evil is ignorance. All comes from that world of unconsciousness and darkness. So if we live in that plane, if we are completely shut to the, or not open at all to the play of a higher energy, because that energy is everywhere. The play of the universal grace is everywhere. If we refuse to open ourselves to that, we are more receptive to the play of the forces of darkness. We become instruments of darkness. It's much easier. Because that power is very strong. It's a universal force. The life energy is energy. It has to be channelized in the right direction, channelized by something that is more conscious, and therefore it can take us towards the light. Amid a tedious scroll of drab desires, drab is really dull, we live, we don't use this energy for anything very powerful. Usually we have small demands, small enjoyments, whether they are based towards personal self, turned towards personal self-satisfaction. Very often that is the case. We live for ourselves. Our desires are turned towards ourselves. Sometimes for something greater. But otherwise it's drab. Drab is really dull. Not noble, not great. We live in that world because we are the center of our own existence. And this central person, the I, is itself so unconscious. We are unconscious, we are ignorant, we are petty, we are small. The energy turning around us is just small. So all our activities, all our feelings, all our emotions are turned selfwards. That is the whole problem. We live for personal enjoyment, personal satisfaction. The enjoyments are small. They are not the enjoyment of wanting to conquer the universe. It's just to get what I want. If I get what I want, I'm happy. That is the first starting point of the play of the life force. It is turning around the ego. She writhed, a worm mid worms in nature's month. Just like the worm. It has a life energy. The worm wants to live. It's difficult to explain, perhaps, for the worm itself to understand, why do I want to live? I don't know. I just don't want to die. That's exactly us. We want to continue to be. For what goal? For what reason? For what realization? Nothing much. Very small personal, you might say, fulfillment of some desires, some satisfactions. That is the whole littleness of our consciousness. That is where we are. Then, but that same energy, if it is turned and becomes is open to the universal life force, Titan-statured, took all earth for food, there are some who have this enormous vital force. And these are the persons who are not satisfied with their just little satisfactions. They are egos, but they are massive egos, huge egos, like titans. Titans are not necessarily dark forces. Titans are forces, powerful, huge egos. If this powerful force, if it can offer itself to the divine, can become an enormously marvelous instrument for change. But usually when the ego of this kind of person has grown so big, it doesn't break. It becomes bigger and bigger. And that is one of the dangers of ambition. One has a huge ambition. One wants to really take over the whole play of the forces around us. For whatever reason, the reason is just for my personal satisfaction. I want to control. I want to take charge. The I gets bigger and bigger and bigger. But I have nothing to contribute to the progress of humanity. That is not my business. It is simply the universal play of force. So ambition, the seas for robe, for crown the stars, as if taking over the universe, the physical world. And the shouting strode from peak to giant peak, clamoring from worlds to conquer and to rule. Then, wantonly enamored of sorrow's face, because that is drama. In us there is also a great love for tragedy, suffering. We don't come out of suffering because we don't want to. Something in us is distorted enough to feel that I'm special because I've been specially selected for some kind of exceptional pain. I feel very, very different from others when my own suffering gives me a sense of my own individuality. I'm not like you. I'm going through difficulties. I'm going through pain. And I do not really want to come out of it, because it gives me my identity for a very long time. And that is why Mother also says we don't want to come out of suffering, which is why we have been suffering for so long. Something in us loves it. We like to weep. Then, wantonly enamored of sorrow's face, she plunged into the anguish of the depths. This life energy, she is life force, in the very heart of darkness, and wallowing, clung to her own misery. She loves that misery. If we really did not want to be miserable, we would do something about it. Something quite strong. Just get rid of it. Just look at ourselves and say, that's enough. We've gone through all this for a very long time. That's time enough to come out of this. It's not required, really. If I am not great, so what? If I have not achieved something marvelous, so what? I have taken one step forward. That, for the time being, is the best I can do. If each of us concentrates on just even our little progress, our little development, we have no time for misery. But self-pity is something that is really fundamental to the ego. We feel very, very special with this sense of self-pity. This is the misery. We love our misery. She plunged into the anguish of the depths and wallowing, clung to her own misery. In dolorous converse with her squandered self, herself, which is being man, has a consciousness. And we are using this consciousness just for our own, in a sense, pleasure. Pleasure of weeping, pleasure of drama, pleasure of all kinds of movements that make me feel isolated from the others. I am different, I am special, I am very sensitive, I am this. I like to say this to myself, I am not like you, so I feel very bad about all these things. If I can just brush it off and say, actually, I have to not waste time on these things. There are things in us that will drag us down. We are made of that stuff. But why waste our attention on that? Why not turn the attention otherwards to something that also we can be, something where we can break out of our littleness? It all depends on which way we turn our consciousness. Yes, the downward pull is there. Okay, I agree. I agree I'm weak. I agree I'm not perfect. But even if I have a moment of a genuine opening to something beautiful, noble, great, that moment is much more valuable than all the rest. And hold on to that movement of trying to break out of my littleness and to grow towards something better. Because I am little, so just repeating it will not help. Repeating that I am made of fear and made of impurity, made of incapacity, made of somebody, nobody understands me, nobody loves me. So what? The Divine loves me. Nobody loves me, what does it matter? What does it mean, love? Our love is asking for returns in exchange. I give something, I want something in exchange. But can I just allow myself to be taken up by that force, the universal love and grace, that in spite of me, if I call, in spite of me, can take me forward, can take me upwards, in spite of my weaknesses? Because I do have weaknesses, we all have. But why focus on those? Why not focus on the other side? That we have the ability to open our nature, not just our eyes, open our whole being to something much more than our little self, much greater than our little selves. And we touched by it, just like you can look at the sun and not look at the night and live in that darkness. Otherwise, we are in dolorous converse with our squandered self. She wrote the account of all that she had lost. We do just that. We keep on repeating to ourselves how badly we have been treated, how many wrong things have been done to us, and we don't want even to try to get rid of it. Okay, I have been misunderstood, I have been badly treated. Just keeping the holding on to that will not remove these things. So that is why repeatedly Mother says, wipe off the past. You cannot undo the past, but you can just get cut off connection with that. Look towards the future. Look towards something other than yourself. Just thinking of whatever you had and you have lost and how badly you have been treated. And this is man's one of the greatest pastimes of the human being. So much poetry, so much art is written about this. It's all about this, the sense of personal suffering. So she wrote the account of all that she had lost, or sat with grief as with an ancient friend. It's my old friend.
Words.
Yeah. We don't want to get rid of it, just like you don't want to get rid of your old friends. But do our old friends, because they are old friends, have they always pulled us forward? Or do they take us down? Because in the past, perhaps my companions were like me. Their vision was limited. Their aspirations were small. And we were perfectly comfortable in that little circle. Today, if I can open myself, you say, how could I bear the company of these people who don't understand or have any kind of response to things that are of real worth, of light and truth? They go back again and again to the past because that is tradition. And it has a big hold on our nature. This is what has happened. We can't come out of it very easily because it has the dead weight of the past. It's a big weight. So this was sat with grief as with an ancient friend. A romp of violent raptures soon was spent. Sometimes it's the other way around. It is like a pendulum. You pull something this way, it goes also to the opposite extreme. When I have been unhappy, so I want to break out of it, so I make a decision to become part of something extremely, dramatically pleasurable, whatever that nature of that pleasure could be. But usually it's the lower nature, the lower vital, the physical. Spend my time in the enjoyment of merely physical and lower pleasures. It is like a romp. It is a game that is noisy, that is disorderly, and that does not give us any freedom from our lower nature. How long can that go on? The pleasures we can take in our lower activities soon was spent. That energy is, we feel very tired actually when we run after all these pleasures and when we run after all these activities where we are full of self-pity. You can wake up, sit in your corner and weep and come out of it very tired. It sucks the energy. It sucks our inner being. A romp of violent raptures soon was spent. Or she lingered, tied to an inadequate joy. Small things. We want small goals. That is the ordinary human play. Little pleasures, little enjoyments. A scene was planned for all her numberless moods. It is as if the divine has planned it out, made a whole drama. All the forces of the movements that can pass through the human nature, all are permitted to have their say. Like in a play, characters have their say. Each one says whatever he has to say. The divine has made the earth a stage and man is the actor. The drama is, as he says. The drama is the Lord's. Earth is the field where he allows the human actor to say his lines. But like an actor, the actor does not write the lines. The actor repeats the lines somebody else has written. They flow out of his mouth. If he is a good actor, it is very convincingly expressed. But it is not his words. What we do are not our words. Our actions are not ours. We are instruments of other forces. They are expressed by us. Much of our behavior, much of our language, much of our expression is not ours. We are not the originator of our life. And we are just channels. all kinds of, it's a very complex field of expression. But each could be the law and way of life. At any given moment you say, this is the most important thing. I want to be happy. All of us would like to say, I want to be happy. Now, happiness will vary from person to person, from time to time, from age to age. When I was a very little child, I loved, say, a lollipop. Today I still may love a lollipop, but that's not the be-all and end-all of existence. It's not everything. It's not that I have to reject the lollipop, but I have other things that have come into my, on my horizon. I can live for something more beautiful, more noble, more great. So that is the thing, that the sense of joy, the sense of happiness, which is the fundamental play of the life force. The life force is meant to be a projection of bliss, the divine creative ananda. This ananda, working in the field of darkness, gets darkened. It becomes small. In the consciousness, which is tiny, that fragment or spark of joy becomes darkened. That is how we are. But at that any given moment, that particular pleasure or that particular goal becomes everything, the most important thing. When each could be the law and way of life, but none could offer a pure felicity. That is the main thing. None could give that perfect joy. There is the first line of the poem Life that Sri Aurobindo has written. He describes life as daughter of delight, mystic miracle, daughter of delight. Life, thou ecstasy. But we don't even know what is delight. It is not a personal enjoyment. It is the very essence of the creative force in the universe. The play that is at work, and the force that is at work in all things, is a divine joy of expressing himself. The divine is manifesting himself through all things. If I can feel that divine presence, anything can become the opportunity for manifesting that ananda. Anything, just looking at a flower or listening to a bird, can connect me to something much vaster than myself. But that is the whole thing. We have lost that connection. If I can connect myself to something much vaster than myself, and it is all around, say just the color of a sunset, it's there. And if I can open to that, respond to that, for a while I forget myself, I'm lost in that sunset. I have become much vaster than myself. But none could offer a pure felicity. Only a flickering zest they left behind. The zest is, you know, in the lemon, that taste that is there. And it, after the lemon is taken, the zest is still there. Like that in life also, there are occasions where the experience is gone, the zest remains. The tingling responses of the being, the nervous responses of the being are still there. Or the fierce lust that brings a dead fatigue, that passion of the lower nature, which demands satisfaction, and that demand is very tiring. When it demands, it has to be satisfied. And once that satisfaction is over, you are drained, you are tired. Amid her swift, untold variety, something remained, dissatisfied, ever the same. And behind all this, the original ananda is there. It is always a search for joy. And what we experience in life is not that joy. So it is always dissatisfied. Whatever we have, you say, it's good, but it's not perfect. It's not what I want. It's not the ideal. And in the new, so only a face of the old. So we repeat the same mistakes, age after age, cycle after cycle. Evolution is not always upwards. It is a repetitive movement, a circular movement. We repeat the same difficulties because it's like a kind of a force that keeps on turning, moving in a circle. And we are caught in that force. I can't come out. I'm trapped by this passion. I'm trapped by this desire. You see, life is like that. And for every hour, repeated all the rest. And every change prolonged the same unease. That is the thing, the sense of not being satisfied. Unease is not pain. Unease is a sense of discomfort. I'm not satisfied. Something is wrong. We always feel that something is not all right. What is that something? We don't go to that central issue. The central issue is the divine. And that connection is lost. Because that connection is lost, all the rest that we are running after does not have a lasting pleasure. Or when it is a pleasure or an enjoyment and goes away, it leaves a bitter taste in the mouth. What you have, you lose. A spirit of herself, an aim unsure. Tired soon of too much joy and happiness. We can't hold on even to happiness. Just for a little while, it's exciting. But excitement is fine for a little while. Then you are drained. You want to go home and rest because you've jumped and shouted and played and laughed, and now you want to rest, perhaps. She needs a spur of pleasure and of pain. Spur is that push, the push that is required to help us move forward. Life is often compared to a horse. The life energy is a horse. And that is one of the significant things. The master of this yoga is Ashwapati, the master of the horse, the lord of the horse, the lord of the life forces, who can channelize all his energies, who is not mastered by them, who has mastered them. We are mastered by our passions. We are mastered by our desires. We are pulled this way and that way. Sometimes towards the light, often, more often towards the darkness. Sometimes towards dullness, towards apathy. All these are aspects. To be able to take hold of the life force and lead it forward. That requires a greater conscious mastery, which we don't have. So he uses the image of the horse when he says the spur, because the rider of the horse has to have spurs on his boots so that the horse is energized to leap forward. Tired soon of too much joy and happiness, she needs the spur of pleasure and of pain and the native taste of suffering and unrest. Because if you do not suffer, you will never taste, you will not feel the pleasure of joy. We go in contraries. Unless I have been unhappy, how will I recognize happiness if it ever comes? Then I can compare and say, yes, yesterday was not nice, today I'm happier. Yesterday I was hopeless, I felt devoid of hope, devoid of any kind of aspiration. Today I'm happier. So perhaps we need this interplay of black and white, darkness and light, rising and falling. This is the duality of our human nature. This is our life force. So She needs the spur of pleasure and of pain and the native taste of suffering and unrest. She strains for an end that never can she win. That's the whole thing. Because she's not changing her consciousness. Life wants ananda. She cannot get it. On the vital plane, you cannot get it. You have to change the... If you stay on that plane, or within the vital plane, if you can get in touch with the divine source of the life force, the divine origin, which it is very difficult because the vital is the field of turbulence, of excitement, like the waves of the on the surface of the ocean, rising and falling all the time. Deep below the ocean, you have quietness. Life can be quiet. But the whole problem is, usually, I am the slave of desire. The first solution is to slay desire, or not be the slave of desire. I am not enslaved to my nature. I have a nature which is not transformed, but I am not the slave of my desire. That itself is the first mastery. And that is the solution the Buddha gave, for instance, of how to come out of suffering. Cut off connection with desire. It is the source. Otherwise we enjoy that native taste of suffering and unrest. She strains for an end that never can she win. A perverse savour haunts her thirsting lips. It is bitter and we enjoy that bitterness. That is the whole thing. It stays with us. The love of sorrow, the love of weeping, we love to weep, we love to rip. That is why when unhappy things are experienced by us, it keeps on repeating itself in your mind and heart. You can't get rid of it. You keep on and on and on and on, talking about it, thinking about it, living in that state. It takes hold of us. We can't say, bus, enough. I've gone through it. I know it wasn't pleasant. Now let me move on. We have to keep on moving on. Life is a field where we have to move on. We don't move on, we move round. The same circuit. And so, a perverse savour haunts her thirsting lips. For the grief, she weeps. She's unhappy that she has lost the grief, which came from her own choice. We suffer because of our own nature. Because we are receptive to this need of personal satisfaction. When I don't get what I want, then I lose. When I lose somebody I love, I grieve. It is not, why I am grieving for whom? For myself. The person I loved is not there. So it's for this person whom I loved, whom I wanted, and I don't want to lose him. So I am really concerned with me. I'm not concerned with what is the good thing for that soul or that being. I'm not really aware of these things. So that is our whole problem. Our whole existence turns around the ego. For the pleasure yearns that racked with wounds her breast. Something that hurt her, she wants that. That hurt is pleasure. Some people love to be beaten. They do, they enjoy. They enjoy being tortured. It's a very perverted pleasure, but it is there. And you hurt me, you beat me. And that's why I feel that I am selected for a special experience. It is a very twisted nature, but it is there. It is not at all very rare. Aspiring to heaven, she turns her steps towards hell. We speak of wanting to enter into a world of light and joy, and actually we do everything that makes us turn away from that world. Chance she has chosen, and danger for playfellows. Fate's dreadful swing she has taken for cradle and seat. That is why we swing between different extremes. And so, if I turn myself towards the need for my personal satisfaction of desire, and I concentrate only on that, I am bound to get hurt. That is going to be my fate. If I can lose myself, forget my ego, even for a little while, and offer myself as an instrument to a greater force, then I have perhaps the opportunity to open to something much vaster, much nobler, but I don't have it. So why has life become like this? Why are we like this? It's a world of mixed, you might say, vibrations, light and darkness, rising and falling, taking joy, when we take joy in pain, not only joy for the sake of joy, just all happiness, you know, life is boring. If you have a life where there is no pain, you say it's a very boring life. Every day is happy. There have to be some days, it's like walking on a road, you need patches of shadow and patches of sunlight. Then you say, yes, this road is complex. My life becomes more complex. And it's plunging into that world, which is extremely, you say, you get obsessed by this. There are writers and thinkers who plunge into that world, the lower vital world. And once you enter, they can't come out. They can't come out of it themselves. They live in that world of darkness. It gives to their life a certain power, a certain significance. There are very great writers who are like that. I don't know. You read certain books, you yourself can't come out of this. I don't know if... You must have read Crime and Punishment. One of the greatest writers, one of the greatest novelists, Dostoevsky. The Russians had very powerful writers. And you read it and you will be haunted by it for I don't know how long. It takes hold of the vital because they have the person who is writing has plunged into that world and he's going through that world and he's transmitting it with such accuracy and such efficiency that if you are a good reader and you concentrate, you are captured. And then once you are captured, you are a prisoner. You can't come out. It is very, very difficult. Therefore, you have to be very careful about the books also that you read, about the companions that you keep, about the places where you go to, because they have all got their own atmospheres, their own consciousness. Why are this vital world so much power? Fate's dreadful swing she has taken for cradle and dress and seat. Yet, pure and bright from the timeless was her birth. That is what she was. She is the daughter of delight. She is a mystic miracle. That is her origin. Somewhere along the way, everything got twisted. That is exactly what Mother sees. Speaks of the perversity that takes place. I remember she gave the example when we were young. It's very easy to understand. There were projections, emanations of the divine creation. They give them like rays of that are projected from the origin. She says, supposing you take a glass jar and you fill it with 3/4 or even more than 3/4 with water and you put a very straight stick inside the jar. and you see the stick has become twisted, and this is us. Originally there is no perversity. Somewhere along the way something has, in the world of water, water is life. Water is the field of consciousness. We enter into that field unknowingly, without becoming aware of where we are going, and things get distorted and we have to go through all the problems. But originally there was no such distortion. There is only the divine energy that has gone forth from the source, from the divine mother. Yet pure and bright from the timeless was her birth. A lost world rapture lingers in her eyes, and as if she is unhappy herself, because she is the embodiment of joy and the world is a field of her manifestation, and world has to be an expression of delight. That is what we are supposed to do. Beauty and happiness are her native right, and endless bliss is her eternal home. At the origin of creation, it is this Ananda. That is the beginning of things, that is the end of things. Somewhere in the middle, a perversity has happened. That is the whole thing. Okay. Yes.
Not from this. What does Savitri represent?
Savitri represents that to me, first of all, the mother, the power of transformation. She has, the word itself says, she is a ray from the sun. Savitra is the sun. Savitri is a projection of the ray from the sun. So she is not an evolving being. She is not an evolutionary being. She is a projection from the world of light. She has come down into this world to transform this world that has lost connection with the light. So it is the divine descent, divine sacrifice. That is the whole power. Without her, the yoga cannot be done. That is why Sri Aurobindo said, my yoga cannot be done without the mother. She has chosen to come down. She is, that doesn't mean she is, her origin is the divine and she has never lost touch with that origin. But she has accepted the conditions of life as it is. She has not stayed apart saying, I belong to another world. I don't belong to this dirty world where there is so much error and so much darkness, so I don't want to be part of all these things. She's taken part in everything. And by her example, perhaps, she's taken joy in everything. Joy in running and walking and playing and eating. There's nothing that she has not done. And telling us, all this can become an expression of the manifestation of the divine if you remain in touch with your inmost psychic guide. She is that guide, she is also inside each of us. So if we can stay in touch with her, then all life can become yoga. It's an opportunity for yoga. That is the synthesis, the subtitle of the book, isn't it? All life is yoga. But Savitri is that power of change, that power of transformation, that power that does not believe that forever all will have to be destroyed. Because if for us there is always the element of imperfection, it will be destroyed. So the two main characters of the story are Savitri and death. Death is the inevitable end. If there is a curve that goes up, it goes down. Can the curve go up and then further up and up and up? That is a new world, a new manifestation. That is the challenge she has taken up. That is why one of the sentences Sri Aurobindo said at the end to the mother in the last year of his physical existence, you have to complete our supramental yoga of transformation. It is for her to complete this. So she had to stay back. He left, but she had to stay back.
What does Satyavan represent then?
Later, he is the soul of the earth. This being that has plunged into the darkness and is evolving from below upwards. It is to liberate this soul of the earth from the clutches of darkness that she has come. Out of love for him. He is the divine that is coming up from below. But he is never darkened, but he has entered into the darkness. But she has come down voluntarily. He is coming up from below.
So we can say Satyavan represents human...
He's not a human being in our human sense. He's given that very beautiful canto, which is the book of love. But he's the divine also. Love is divine. But it is not what is usually described as a marriage between a man and a woman. Or basically, what is that marriage? What is the marriage? It is an expression of lives that linger, that join together because there is a unity of conscious souls. You recognize. So here a soul can recognize its answering soul. You can recognize. There is a kind of a play of the divine in the multiplicity. But Satyavan is the soul of the earth. She is the descending power.
So the final journey can only is after the when both of them meeting and proceeding. Or both the somebody who has a descent and the ascent of the soul from here meeting together or marriage, which we can say.
That becomes the occasion, unless they met, the occasion of taking out from the path of man's journey that which stops him from going forward eternally. You're trapped in your mortality. She is the soul of the earth, to remove that. So he otherwise will have to fall back. That's why death will never touch Savitri. Death is afraid of Savitri. Death will take hold of Satyavan. But death is not death. Death is not an end. The beautiful lines about death here. At the end, death is a mask. Death is a dim mask. She sees behind the face. Behind the mask, she sees the face. Death, a dim mask, had grown a wonderful face. That is what Savitri recognizes. Death is a power. We cannot live forever as we are. We don't have the energy to continue for all eternity. We do not have the consciousness at present. Death has to come. Until we become manifestations of the eternal, we cannot live for eternity. Isn't it?
So, she has come to remove that. What is...
Yes. That is the... She's the power of transformation. That is her task. That is why when she read Savitri, she told Sri Aurobindo, you have put all my experiences in this book. All that I have come for and all my experiences are here. It's for the future yet. Okay.